Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray.
Good evening, Michael.
Good evening, Sherry.
And a stunning evening it is.
A stunning evening it is.
In Palo Alto, California.
In Palo Alto, California. We've been listening to Poptronica, some great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Get us in the mood for awareness practice, whatever that music is.
That was it? Yeah.
That was it. So you can catch us in the Bay Area here at 90.1 FM. If you're further away, you can pick us up over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu.
Sure. And I understand, Michael, that if people have difficulty doing that, they can go to our website, and there are detailed instructions about how to get hooked up and hear us over the internet.
That's exactly correct. Sherry has a new website, which is www.sherryhuber.com. Spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R. Sherry's been a student and teacher for 25-plus years.
25-plus. 25 and counting.
25 and counting. Author of many, many fabulous books.
Thank you, sir.
If you want to join us today, please pick up your phone. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. If you want to reach us by email as well, drop an email to openair@kzsu.org, and you can contact us with a personal issue you're looking at or broader issues that are of interest to you.
Mm-hmm. We're willing to talk about anything.
We will talk about anything. Mm-hmm. I was telling Eric earlier that we're pretty good at running our mouths here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people will often ask me, what's appropriate to talk about? Because this is spiritual. And so what's a spiritual topic?
What's not?
Exactly. Everything in life is a spiritual issue if we look at it that way. So why not include it all?
Exactly. So, Sherry, you're going to be here at Stanford talking next Wednesday evening.
Correct.
February 5th, mm-hmm. 6:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Right after being here in this studio doing this program.
Yeah, we'll have to race over there.
Yeah.
Make sure we get everywhere on time.
Exactly.
That'll be next Wednesday, February 5th, 6:30 p.m. at the Arriaga Alumni Center on Galvez Street on the Stanford campus. If you have any more questions about that, you can call us at the station or email us. We'd love to see you there. So we have a quote of the day today, which is one of the keys to freedom and joy.
Mm-hmm.
And that key is, don't take it personally.
Much suffering is ended immediately and automatically when we cease to take life personally.
Yes.
Which is just kind of an out there concept for a lot of us, because we are, in our socialization process, we are heavily conditioned to take everything personally.
Very personally.
Yeah.
And when I think about that phrase, don't take it personally, I often first interpret it in the negative way. But it also applies in the other direction as well.
Yes, it does.
Which is
that's the advanced course.
That's the advanced course.
Yeah.
That's the one I don't want to let go of personally.
Exactly.
Because if they love me, if they're complimenting me, then it must
yes.
be me.
Yeah.
Me.
Me. Me, especially me.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with them. Years ago when I was in the monastery where I trained, I went to my teacher. I was very, very upset because this woman who was sort of in my circle of acquaintance, and I thought we got along just fine, and I received information that she hated me, didn't sort of dislike me, or I wasn't her favorite person, she hated me, and I took it hard, and he listened to my sad tale of woe, and after a while he said, and who did she hate before you came along? And, of course, because I had known her for some time, I had heard about the string of people who had occupied the place that I was currently occupying. And it was such a wonderful perspective to have, that it really had so very little to do with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was important for me to
yeah.
To think at that point.
To move beyond that place.
Yeah.
If it's all about me.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't want to do a little check-in with the qualities and characteristics that were not endearing me to her. And aside from that, that, to realize that there will be somebody in that place after I'm gone.
Yes.
And that I don't really have it in my power to be a wonderful enough person to change somebody's orientation to life, that we change our orientation to life when we are ready. And for most of us, it's when we have suffered enough. So yes, to try to twist myself into a person that she's going to approve of is just a waste of time.
And how much of our lives do we spend trying to twist ourselves so that people will?
Yeah, because, of course, we're the center of the universe.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I am.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It will arm wrestle for that, yeah, for that position. So, you know, how many of us have that feeling of walking into a room and truly feeling, thinking, believing that everybody in that room is aware of us, that they're judging us, criticizing us, thinking we look fabulous, if we think we look fabulous on this particular occasion, uh-huh, whatever it is, you know, we are the center of their reality. And, of course, we know when we are the ones sitting there.
And someone that walks in.
Yeah, you know, we're pretty much oblivious because we were busy being the center of our own universe.
Yes.
So it's kind of a funny thing we get going about that.
Yeah.
So not taking it personally, to me, just, you know, helps bring it into perspective.
Yeah, sort of takes the sting out.
Yeah.
Feels like.
Mm-hmm. So who do we get to talk to?
We get to talk to Johnny in San Diego.
Wonderful.
Johnny, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Johnny. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Michael, and hello, Sherry.
Good evening.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to finally talk to you. I've heard about you, and I've read one of your books.
Good.
The one about self-hatred.
And going beyond.
Going
same.
Sorry, so I guess I missed the...
These people will say to me, oh, and I'm going to your retreat on self-hatred. Well, that's what we need.
So
we'll spend eight days fine-tuning your self-hatred. Yeah, going beyond self-hatred. I know the one you mean.
Okay. And I enjoyed it a lot.
Good, good. Thank you.
Although it's been probably 6 months since I read it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I bring up a point unintentionally, I haven't completely absorbed it. I'm sorry.
Well, do you know what? It's been way longer than that since I've read it.
Okay.
So we should be all right here.
Okay, my question has to do with a relationship that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And from a philosophical, spiritual point of view, and this, I think, is a very common issue for people, is whether to let go, whether to move on,
mm-hmm,
and whether you feel like that the relationship is worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from my perspective, this is something I'm just beginning. And I think that in our goals are to be in the moment and to enjoy now and not to label anything, not to judge it. And yet I know in this experience that I'm not, I believe that I'm not experiencing in this relationship what I want in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. What do you want?
Well, that's interesting. There, I've had experiences where I guess there's a fantasy part of it that's missing.
Mm-hmm.
There are parts of this that are, you know, that I wouldn't expect or that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain amount of acceptance of me that I hadn't hoped for,
mm-hmm,
and that I feel from this person. But I think, you know, I've had other experiences where I've felt more in love. So,
mm-hmm, okay. Can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure. You can ask me
one. Okay. The pronoun for this person is she.
Yes.
Okay. Now, have you felt this these fantasy feelings for her at all in the relationship?
I think in the very first meeting,
uh-huh,
there was some of that.
Okay.
I met her through a dating service.
Mm-hmm. And then as time has gone on, have you gotten closer?
Yes. We're fairly honest. I mean, the reason why I say fairly honest is I don't share every doubt about the relationship with her, although she is pretty in tune with that. So, yeah, we've gotten closer. I've shared a lot of my history, and she shared a lot of her history.
Mm-hmm. And so could you kind of do a little chart there where the closer you've gotten, the more this has become an issue? Or is that kind of a leap?
It's a good question. I don't know whether... I would say there was a point where it went in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you're clear about what that point was?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, let me say this and then see if there's any connection here for you.
Okay.
Do you know that old quote that's attributed to everybody, all the comics who have died? I don't want to be a member of a club that would have me as a member.
Yeah.
You know that one?
I've heard it as attributed to Groucho Marx.
Yeah. And W.C. Fields and
okay.
Yeah. Pretty soon we're going to be in the Marianne Williamson, Nelson Mandela thing here.
Okay.
But what how does that strike you?
That's a doubt I have. I mean, the self-doubt I have.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hope it's not true.
But it's occurred to you.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, the old, if this crazy about me, I can do better.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if that applies or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm willing to look at it,
mm-hmm.
But I hope it's not true.
Why is that? Why do you hope it's not true?
Well, that would indicate that I'm, at least at this point in my life, I'm destined for unhappiness because... I won't allow myself to have the acceptance that I want.
Okay. Now, you just made a leap there that I wouldn't necessarily
okay.
make. And that is, to me, it would be a hopeful and optimistic thing.
Okay.
Because if that's the case, you can address that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that says, this wouldn't make you a terribly unusual person. That's the thing that I think many, and you started out saying, you know, this happens in a lot of relationships,
right.
Especially over time. You know, you get very close, you know everything about one another, you start getting into this unconditional love mess, and then, you know, where are the sparks? Where's the excitement? Where's the, you know, the passion and the fire and all
right.
of that sort of thing that we might get with, say, a stranger? Right? Who doesn't know
yeah.
anything about us, doesn't particularly like us, doesn't even care if we're likable. You know, that's that. And so there we are weighing those two approaches to a relationship, right? Yeah. So especially, you know, if you're the kind of person who's looking at maybe settling down and having some kids and this sort of thing, then this is an issue to face.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And so you can do that. If that's what's going on, then you take steps to explore that part of yourself, to find out how that process works in you and to move beyond it rather than, oh, well, you know, I'm destined to failure or I want to get out of this relationship because what if that is what's going on? Well, I don't want to know. You know, I kid people that we go along in a relationship until we get to the point where the relationship is mirroring us in a way that we no longer want to be mirrored. You know, when we first get together, I am fascinating, exciting, sexy, charming, romantic, delightful. And then, you know, a year later, you know, I'm kind of drifting back into being my same old stodgy, kind of boring self. And so I need to go find a new mirror. Right? I want to go back to that place where I'm exciting and romantic and fun and...
Okay, but even in these, the terms you're using are relative, really. This relationship is a month old, or a little over a month old.
Uh-huh.
And to think that it could go from the excitement to Stodgy.
In a month?
Yeah, that's pretty quickly.
Is that kind of a record?
No, that's typical.
That's typical for you.
I would say, yeah. Well, if it gets if it gets this far.
If it gets to a month.
Yeah, if it gets to a month.
Johnny.
Yes.
This is definitely something to look into.
Oh yeah, yeah. But on the other side, I mean, these are all difficult to tap down. I feel like I'm settling if I don't go. You know, if you
settle for this,
right?
Okay, now what are you doing if? Because I bet this, you know, this is not the third or fourth time this has happened, right?
Right.
Yeah, you got a track record here. So what are you doing if staying in a relationship and finding out what happens is settling? What are you doing on the other end of the continuum? How would you label that?
It's usually that's a good question. She got away, or she didn't understand me, or something to that effect.
So here's now, of course, you know, you can approach this in any way you want. But when I'm in this place within myself, because this is what we call in my line of work a karmic issue, okay? So, and there we get kind of nose to nose with our karma, and it's awful, it's terrible, it's painful. We don't want to face it. We want to keep doing the same old thing because that's what's familiar. And yet it starts getting too painful to do the same old thing, and then we get pain to the left and pain to the right, and it's a rugged go. So, you know, if you're the kind of person who always leaves, it might be helpful to stay. Because you know what leaving is. You know, you're going to find the next person and do the same thing, and the next person and do the same thing. So it might be interesting, not to say you have to stay for the rest of your life, but number one, to define settling, so that you're really clear about what you mean by that. Now, settling could be what somebody calls having to face your issues, because facing your issues sounds like a matter of responsibility, and settling sounds like something that no fool would want to do.
Right.
Okay? So it might be helpful to define what settling is, and then also just to stick around long enough to see what's really going on with you in this situation.
But the sticking around necessarily means a more painful breakup.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily?
I don't think so. Not if you're both doing the work consciously. You know, if you go into this, now if you try to keep it to yourself and hide what's going on, which obviously from what you've said doesn't work anyway, and you're going to have all this stuff going on behind the scenes and trying to pretend like it's not and this sort of thing, and you go along and you've actually managed to fool this woman, and she thinks, you know, you're headed for the three children and the station wagon in the suburbs, and all the time you have one foot out the door, then, yeah, perhaps. But if there's consciousness, openness, honesty, you know, a straightforward approach to this whole thing, then no. You know, if you're, you know, this, you sound like a serious kind of a guy. So, you know, you're looking at some point making a real commitment to somebody. You want to know who you are and what you're committing to and how capable you are of making that commitment.
That's all true.
Yeah. Yeah. So check back in and let us know, would you?
All right.
Good.
So you're saying define settling.
Yes. Because
then learn about myself through this relationship. And then at what point?
You'll know. Yeah. You'll know. If you're really paying attention, you'll know. And, you know, I'm not even saying it needs to be this one. But one, pretty soon.
No, I mean, at what point do I know that I've learned enough about myself and it's time to move on?
You'll know if you're really paying attention. If you're doing this consciously, you'll know when it's all right with you if you stay and it's all right with you if you go. That you could see advantages in staying. You could picture being there for the rest of your life. You could see advantages in going. You could really see your future not in that relationship. When you get to that place of equanimity, then you're free to do whatever. But the key word there is you're free.
The interesting thing, though, is that there's a voice that, I mean, the reason why I brought this up, there's a voice inside me that's saying, gotta go.
That's right. That's right.
And
that's
you're
right.
saying that I will know when it's time to go.
That's right. Because here's the secret, and you're already on to it. You'll recognize that voice as a voice. He always says that. He always says that. Now, what we're meant to believe is you're going to meet the right woman, and he won't say that. But that's not true. That's what he says. He'll always say it. So when you catch on to that, then you no longer have to base your life on what he says. So, you know, you have a best friend. No matter what woman you get involved with, he looks at her and says, mm-mm, that's not the one.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, after a while, you got to wonder what he's got going.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're always in that scene, you're always looking at the woman going, oh, yeah, I guess she's not the one. How about looking at the best friend and saying, what are you up to?
Okay. I really will try to do that.
Good. Now, do you know the old thing about trying?
All right, I really will do that.
There you go. I see that you know that old thing.
but I'm still, you know, I don't know which voice is saying this right now, but one of them saying, where's the escape clause? Because I don't want to commit right now.
That's right. And so here's the deal. Have you ever journaled?
Yeah.
Okay, journal. Get these voices down. Learn who they are. Learn what they say. Realize that they're voices. They're voices. They're not anything you need to do anything about. You're in charge. You're the boss.
All
okay?
Right.
They're your advisors, but you're the boss. All right?
All right.
Let us know, Johnny.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Johnny. Thanks for joining us. It was, Sherry, it was interesting in listening. I was thinking that the closer I get to myself, someone else, the more I am scared, excited,
yeah.
and I can sort of substitute myself or someone else.
Yeah.
And whether it's scary or exciting is, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it's going to go both ways. The odds are very good it's going to go both ways, right?
Especially with
something like scary and exciting, because when we check in with those two things, they actually feel the same way in the body.
Yes.
So if I'm getting, if I'm doing something and I'm getting signals that, whoa, this is great, then all of those sensations in the body are interpreted as, yay, this is good, let's go.
Right.
If I start getting into a place of, ooh, I'm not certain about this, then those same sensations, you know, my palms are sweaty and my heart is racing and my stomach is doing flip-flops, and this means, oh, this is bad, this is a mistake, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
So, I've been reflecting often on that. I think this is Thoreau or Groucho Marx or
someone.
Well, someone. The unexamined life is not worth living.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we're talking about. You know, we think we know because we hear this stuff all the time. We think we know ourselves. We think we know what we're thinking and why we're thinking that, or how we're thinking, or what we're feeling, or what this means, or, and most of us don't. It takes a great deal of paying attention to have any clue at all about what's going on with us.
Uh-huh. And to work through those stories,
yeah.
and to see them for what they are.
Yeah.
Come back to what's going on in our bodies.
Yeah, yeah. And even if I come back to my body, and my heart is pounding, and my stomach is doing flip-flops, and my palms are sweaty, well, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm in any danger.
Right.
It might just be a habit. It might be an allergic reaction. It might be any number of things. It doesn't mean that I have to do or not do anything.
Right.
So to trust ourselves, to be able to check in and pay attention and get to know, you know, in the practice that we do, to come back to the breath and breathe through whatever it is that's going on and get to a place of clarity and act from there. Life very seldom puts us in such a state of emergency that we have to act first and ask questions later. Very rarely. You know, our egocentric karmic conditioning would like us to believe that we're every moment of life is that kind of urgency, but it isn't.
Uh-huh. And that, you know, carrying that urgency around day after day, year after year, it gets tiring.
It's exhausting. In fact, it'll kill you.
It'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Great. Well, we're going to take a short break here for a moment, and then we're going to be back with our next caller. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We have a great show going today.
I want to tell you this little fun thing to know and tell. The sound that was just on there, that's exactly what the monastery sounds like in the evening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all the creatures out there in the pond and around, and that's what it sounds like.
Uh-huh.
I felt like I was at home.
Wow, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So you're listening to Open Air. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're here with Zen teacher Sherry Huber. We're talking about everything. And you're picking us up in the Bay Area at 90.1. If you're further away, you can catch us over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. After this show, at 6 o'clock, we'll have Brownian Motion with your imaginary friend. Following that, we'll have Wednesday Night Live with Ryan Lynch. So please stay tuned. And we have our next caller on the line. I'd like to welcome Robin from Michigan. You're on Open Air.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening.
What should we look at?
Who's going to talk first?
Well, I have a question, but I'm having trouble formulating it.
Okay.
I will try. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
I seem to suffer the most when I'm identified as the child or one of my inner children.
Okay, so you're going along, and everybody thinks that you're a grown-up because you look like one.
Uh-huh.
But emotionally, inside, you're actually a small child.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen much of the story that's wrapped up in my childhood conditioning.
Mm-hmm. So if we said... So tell us about that. You could go, well, this happened and that happened and my mother this and my father that and then this and then I had that trauma and you got it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's still some resistance to disidentifying.
Ooh, absolutely.
And I'm not quite sure what that's about.
Okay. I am.
Somebody better be.
Isn't that good? This is one of those where I jump up and down in my seat and wave my hand. I know the answer. Yeah. What do you see when you try to disidentify? Now, let's just clarify this for people who might just be driving down the road and think, what are they talking about? So there you are as that young child, and you know why. You know what the story is. You know why you are emotionally kind of, for the moment, trapped in being 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 years old.
Right.
And there's enough conscious awareness there that you know you could, as we say, step back from that. You could move away and you could become an adult and operate from that, what we call, disidentified perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And there it is available, and then you don't want to. Even though you're suffering in that place, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you see when you run into that?
There are times that I'm totally in the adult space,
mm-hmm.
and feeling great. And then there's times that I'm totally in the child space and feeling miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's times when I'm facing the choice of resisting the collapse into the child space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all the resistance comes up. Where it's so easy for me to just fall into the self-pity and the crying and the poor me syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the way we can, because there might be people out there thinking, I never have that experience. I don't know who they are, but they could be thinking that. But it's the place that we all get into with whatever our difficulty is, right? So... For some people, they may never cry, but they head for the kitchen and they start working their way through the refrigerator. or they suddenly they find themselves with the third or the fourth drink in their hand when they have decided that they're not going to do that, or they are, you know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning and they've been sitting there in front of the television set for 6 hours and they had decided that. So it's whatever we fall into when we no longer are maintaining that conscious, present, aware perspective. Yeah?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So there you are, and you fall into it.
Right.
Because it's so tempting, it's so easy, it's so sort of comfortable, even though it's miserable.
Right.
Yeah. And then what?
Well, the most recent thing that I've noticed is that I'm often feeling in a space of emptiness or feeling alone,
mm-hmm.
and falling into the story, I start having an interaction with myself, so I don't feel alone. It's like I'm having a conversation with
right.
another part of myself.
Yes, yes, exactly.
It's a miserable conversation.
It's a miserable conversation about how life stinks, and I hate this, and I'm miserable, and nothing works for me, but at least you're not alone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you considered having that same process of a conversation with yourself, but with different content? In other words, what if you were having the conversation with yourself, the kind of conversation that you would like to be having with someone else?
I have had the conversation the most compassionate part of myself.
Uh-huh. And how was that?
Great.
Uh-huh.
But I also noticed the resistance to shift from the miserable conversation to the compassionate conversation.
Yeah. And now, is that the part you're wondering, this is the why?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because you're suffering.
Right.
Why? Why would you not want to do whatever it took to stop that suffering? And to me, this, you know, this is the piece of it that that Buddhism sort of has that I wish we could offer it to the rest of the world, you know, kind of the give it away on every street corner sort of thing. Because if you consider for a moment, and it is your experience, so it won't be hard to consider, that there are forces in you, aspects of you, impulses, however you want to talk about that, there's an energy in you that wants to suffer. It makes sense out of the whole thing. Now, if we can get it that that's the case, that there are parts of me who not that they're sabotaging me or they don't have my best interest at heart or that sort of thing. It's beyond that. They want to suffer. You know, given a choice of 10 activities, they will pick suffering, okay? So if we know that, if we know that that's the case, and here's the next piece of it that is just critical. If we can know that and not take it personally, if we can get that we have absolutely no control over the fact that that mechanism exists in us. So I don't have to know that and say, oh my, what is the matter with me? I am sick. This is perverted. I have all of these options available to me, and I'm going to pick suffering? What kind of a psycho am I? Okay? It's not like that. If we go down that road, then guess what? We've looped right back in on suffering again. But if I get it, that, yeah, there's a big, strong pull in me toward suffering. It's why people can't stop drinking alcohol when they want to.
Mm-hmm.
You can't quit smoking cigarettes just because you want to. You can't change your relationship with food just because you wake up one morning and say, you know, I want to have a different relationship with food. There's all this self-hating process that's going on inside of us that constantly is leading us back to suffering. So just to play with that as a notion and say, oh, yeah, well, and then you can call it whatever you want. I call it conditioning because it's just an easy way for me to think about it. But, you know, you could call it whatever. Give it a pet name if you like. You know, the captain of the suffering team. And that person is going to come in, you know, in 12-step programs like AA, they encourage people never to be hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, because those are the kinds of low energy times when this force can most easily come in and turn our lives into suffering. So you recognize that that's there. You recognize that it takes a tremendous willingness to go in another direction. So, you know, we can take advantage of those little 12-step tips. You know, don't let yourself get too hungry. Don't let yourself get angry and upset over something. Don't let yourself get lonely. Don't let yourself get overtired. Just those simple things, those simple ways of taking care of yourself, which, incidentally, are the things that people have the greatest difficulty doing in their lives. Right? So people don't eat right. They don't get enough sleep. They overwork. They keep these crazy long hours. They eat junk food. They don't exercise. All the things that keep us from being in that depleted state. So it's a kind of a double whammy. Right? So if you think of, now you're already talking about seeing yourself as a small child. So that gives you the opportunity to become the kind, compassionate, caring older person who can take care of that child. So you don't let her get too tired, or you don't let her eat junk food. You don't let her go to the corner coffee place and have a triple Jamocha Frappuccino, whatever it is, okay? It's not good for her, okay? Make sure she gets to bed on time. Don't let her read about and hear about and go to movies where things are really upset. Take care of her, okay? And then you are the front line of defense. You're positioning yourself between that small child and these forces in us that are really interested in using every moment of life as an opportunity to suffer.
So is conditioning different than the subpersonality?
Now that's the kind of thing that, if you're asking that question, I want you to answer that question for yourself.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Because it doesn't really help to get an intellectual understanding about this. I mean, it helps in the sense that, you know, you're going to drive from Michigan to California. Having a map of the United States would be really helpful, okay? But to have somebody say, and then drive 53 miles to the next rest stop and then go another 35 miles and get gas at the, you know, that's not helpful. So you're going to take out on this journey, you've got your map, and you're going to make your own way through the terrain. Because when you have the experience for yourself, it means something.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're going to keep in touch, right?
Oh, yes.
All right. Good.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. And we've had some great callers today.
Yeah, deep and thoughty people looking at big life issues.
Big life issues.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, as Robin was talking, that for me, finally getting to that place of no control is ultimately, feels like to me, easier than pretending to be in control most of the time and then getting
slammed,
rudely mm-hmm. awakened.
Yeah.
Because when I'm in that place of no control, I can still be aware of what's going on.
Yeah, well, you know, I talk to people in terms of that parenting model all the time. And, you know, if you, those of us who have actual physical children walking around in the world, the thing that is hardest to get is that as much as we love someone, we cannot actually protect them. We can do the best that we can do, but we're not in control. So I can bring as much care and concern and nurturing and all of that as I can muster, and I am not in control of life. So whether it's, as Robin is talking about, in that sort of inside myself process, or even with another person, we show up, we're present, we're as conscious as we can be, we bring as much compassion to it as we can manage, we do the best we can, and it goes where it goes.
It goes where it goes.
Yeah.
And being there wholeheartedly and present is joyful.
Yeah.
Independent of what happens.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Great. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're going to have a short break, and then we'll be back with our next caller.
Did you know that more people suffer from Parkinson's disease than multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, and Lou Gehrig's disease combined? Did you know that Parkinson's disease affects not only the elderly, but even people in their 30s and 40s, and this figure is growing at an alarming rate? There is no cure, but there is hope. The American Parkinson's Disease Association works to ease the burden and find the cure through medical research, patient and family support, and education. If you or someone close to you has Parkinson's and needs help or information, please call the American Parkinson's Disease Association at 1-800-908-2732. That's 1-800-908-2732.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
We're going to get some of those birds for the monastery.
You're going to get import them? Or yeah, maybe they're here in the country already?
Yeah, who knows?
I like that.
I like that sound.
Or just you could get the CD and some little speakers on that. Someone might catch on.
Yeah.
So we have another caller on the air. I'd like to welcome Becky from the Midwest. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, Becky.
Becky, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good.
Are we on the air?
We are on the air, as far as I can tell.
Sherry, I want to thank you for taking my call. And for the reminder about don't take it personally at the beginning of the show, that was great.
Good.
Kind of picked up on that reading some of your books and at the Nothing Wrong With Your retreat last November, which was absolutely wonderful for me at that time in my life.
Oh, good.
And it's been sort of a lifeline for me. I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about the concept of annihilation and how that, and acceptance and control. I heard you talk a little bit about annihilation one time, and it was real interesting. And I'm going through this situation now. It's a really big relationship change where I've started finding out a couple of months ago essentially that what I thought was true about our relationship for the last 3 years has not been true. And that there's been a lot of outside exploration, and it's like every other week there's another disclosure that gets more and more significant in terms of what it means to our partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had to really let go of that fantasy relationship that I've had and accept what is and work with that. And I'm finding that I'm letting what I thought were important rules about being in relationship with this man kind of fall away, so that I can continue to work my process rather than just running out of fear or out of anger or out of pride or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Hurt feelings would be right up there for me.
Pardon?
Hurt feelings.
Very
would be,
hurt. Very hurt. A lot of pain. Used a technique that I don't know if I read it in one of your books or somewhere else about when you hear yourself telling this story over and over to see if you can let go of the story and experience it in your body, and that's been so helpful. It's really allowed me to do a lot of grieving and a lot of just some real cathartic energy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That we think the story is helping us get it out, but when we drop the story and do the kind of process that you're talking about, we realize that telling the story is keeping it stuck.
Absolutely, and I would not have believed that until it happened for me a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
That's the argument for having our own experience, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I've had these experiences of everything changing, and there was one night when I really thought, I have a history of mental illness in my family, and I thought, maybe this is what's going to do it.
I'm just going to go right over an edge.
Over an edge, yeah. This one last neuron is just going to fire the wrong way.
That's it for me.
Because everything's had to be reprogrammed,
yeah. Well, and we're kidding, and it's true, isn't it, that in terms of identity, you're probably getting fairly close to being a completely different person than you were, say, 3 years ago.
Absolutely, yeah.
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 It's not the way we want to do transformation. this is letting go. It takes on a whole new meaning with this kind of thing, but that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and fortunately I've had support in that. I was beginning to go through some therapy and self-growth and so forth, beginning about 3 years ago, interestingly. This last 4 or 5 months has just been, like you said, I feel like I'm a different person mm-hmm. from what I was when it all started.
So
I guess, yes, I was real curious about, after having heard you talk about annihilation, and just if you could talk about that a little bit and what that has to do with these issues of acceptance and releasing control and those kinds of things.
Yeah, because that's it sounds like, were you at the monastery?
I was,
the retreat? Yeah.
In November.
You might have read on the one thing that we have kind of posted in a formal way there is from the beginning of The Way of Transformation. And in that, the author talks about the process of feeling annihilated by life and by the struggles of life that we... if we are, it's not my experience that we have much choice about this. Life is going to work its magic on us whether we are willing or not. It's just that if we're willing, it's a little less painful. In fact, it can be actually quite joyful when we sort of get on the ride and really commit to it. There is that feeling that everything that is me, not in the sense of authentically me, but identity me, all of my ideas about life, my beliefs, my opinions, how things have to be, how things should be, what I'll settle for, what I'm willing to put up with, it just, before it's over, it's all out the window. Now, to me, I would say if we're lucky, that's the case. There seem to be some people who sort of make it through life apparently kind of unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an old, I've heard it Chinese, but who knows, kind of a curse that goes, may you be born in a happy time.
Mm.
With the idea that we have such a tremendous opportunity to awaken and end suffering in this lifetime and to pass a lifetime being sort of lulled along, complacent, satisfied, is just, compared to what our potential is, could be considered sort of a waste.
Yeah, I can see that. I actually experience times, moments, maybe, but when I'm very grateful for this experience because I hadn't realized how much I was trying to control everything and what kind of stress that placed on me and on the people around me, and I'm just learning so much from this.
Yeah. I was talking with a woman earlier today who was telling me about, she was actually interviewing me for a magazine article, so it was kind of fun that we had this conversation, but she was interviewing me about our new book, When You're Falling Dive, which is on acceptance and how to do a process of acceptance.
I'm really looking forward to that one.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, she was telling me that when she was 29, she had a year and a half old child and a 3-year-old child, and she was diagnosed with this very rare, extremely aggressive form of cancer. And, She said, we went into it saying, whatever it takes, you know, whatever it takes to get through this, because I am unwilling to leave my family and these little children at this age. And she said, as it turned out, you know, she didn't have to have her arm amputated and, you know, a lot of the things that they were afraid was going to happen to her. And 10 years later, she seems to be fine. You know, she's healthy. And we were talking about the process of accepting this kind of thing. And part of the acceptance is everything you go through in the process. Because she said, you know, I wound up in therapy, which I never thought I would do. I went crazy. I was hysterical. I hated it. And how that whole thing is part of that transformation process, the annihilation of this old identity, who I was before, and then who I have become through the process. And she was talking about the same thing, how very grateful she is for every bit of it.
Wow.
Not just grateful that I survived, grateful that I'm alive, but grateful for all of the changes that came. Because she says now, you know, when that people are constantly referring people to her, especially young people who are diagnosed, you know, now she says, I feel like I can be helpful. I feel like I can be of service because I've been there. And so I'm sure you see that with yourself,
yeah.
The increase in compassion.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, you go through something like this and, you know, you look at people and their struggles in a whole different way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, who am I to judge?
Even with my partner.
Yeah.
Even with my partner that as angry as I have been, as enraged as I have been, to be able to step back and the don't take it personally helped with this.
Absolutely.
So much. That this is his stuff. It's not about me. It's his path. And reading through some of your stuff on precepts, the book on the precepts retreat, and
mm-hmm.
about how each person's path is what they need to be doing at
mm-hmm.
this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to remember that, and that makes a big difference.
Right, also. And that your job is to come from the most aware, conscious, compassionate place that you can manage in every moment,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, that
mm-hmm.
that for each one of us, that's our job,
yeah.
not to, and not only our job, but it's our opportunity. It, should we choose to accept it, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's not mandated, you know,
right.
we don't have to. I mean, we can, as Robin was saying, you know, sometimes we just want to sink down into woe is me, and
that happens. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's not like there are rules about it, but to realize that it's not my job to worry about what other people are doing. It's my opportunity to embrace everything that arises in my sphere into conscious, compassionate awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And it was great talking with you.
You too. Thank you.
All right.
Good night.
Wow, wonderful people.
Wonderful people. Becky, thanks for joining us. We're close to the end of our hour here.
Flown by again.
It was great.
Mm-hmm. I like this. I love having the opportunity to talk with people in this way. You just,
yes.
You know, if you wonder how the world is doing and what people are up to, and then you have some of these conversations, and you think, good people.
Yeah, and it's great with the Internet. People can hear us
mm-hmm.
all over.
Yeah.
Couple reminders here before we take off. Next Wednesday, 6:30 p.m., Sherry will be here at Stanford at the Arriaga Alumni Center at 6:30 p.m., right after the radio show here. If you're in the Bay Area, please come and join us. And if you have any questions, if you want to email us, you can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. General questions, personal questions.
Yeah, if you're at all moved in that direction, pick up the phone next week and give us a call.
Yeah, please give us a call. And as a reminder of the phone number, it's 650-723-9010. We'll be here next Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. If you're interested in learning more about what Sherry's up to, Sherry has a new website, which is sherryhuber.com. That's spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R. like to thank all of our help today.
An excellent staff it
An
is.
Excellent staff, Lori, Eric, all of our listeners, mm-hmm. wherever they are,
and
all of our callers.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. It's great to be here. It's really, it's been a blast doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to get back next week.
All right. See you then.
Next up, we have Brownie in Motion with your imaginary friend. Later on tonight at 9 p.m., we have Wednesday Night Live with Ryan Lynch. Please stay tuned. See you next week.
Good night.